Welcome to the Great Awakening Ministry. I am Minister and Yogini Joanne Lee. And on this week's show, we have John Butcher. John is a renowned mythologist and story expert who has been featured on the BBC, the History Channel, the LA Times, the Hollywood Reporter, and numerous other international outlets. He serves as executive director for the Joseph Campbell Foundation and is a writer, podcaster, storyteller, and speaker. Holding a PhD in mythology and depth psychology, he integrates scholarly insights and practical storytelling techniques, exploring the profound connections between myth, culture, and personal identity. The Joseph Campbell Foundation invites all to experience the power of myth and builds on the work of Joseph Campbell, who was an American author and teacher best known for his work in the field of comparative mythology. While in Europe, Campbell was influenced by the art of Pablo Picasso and Henri Matisse, the novels of James Joyce, and the psychological studies of Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung. These encounters led to Campbell's theory that all myths and epics are linked in the human psyche and are cultural manifestations of the need to explain social, cosmological, and spiritual realities.
Hello, it's so nice to see you.
John, lovely to see you. And welcome to the Great Awakening Show.
Well, it is my pleasure to be here. I'm so glad that you extended this invitation, and it's just a joy and an honor to be with you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And wow. I mean, you in your own right, we'll get to all of the questions, but Joseph Campbell, please just tell our audience who do not know who Joseph Campbell is. Who was Joseph Campbell?
Yes. Well, Joseph Campbell was a teacher and a thinker. He was a mythologist. He was someone who looked beyond what we could see and know and hear into the infinite space of history and consciousness. And he was an explorer of that which is beyond us, I would say. Joseph Campbell was a deep reader and someone who spent a lot of time studying the various traditions around the world that have given us meaning and purpose in life. In 1949, he wrote a book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And out of that book came this idea that he saw running through history and literature that perhaps all of the great stories that had been told throughout history and the world, perhaps they were all versions of the same story. And he had this idea that there was a monomyth, a singular myth, running through all of human history. And that singular myth later became known as the hero's journey. And we see the hero's journey not only in our ancient literature and in the lives of great leaders and thinkers, but we also see it in our modern pop culture, in movies and music and in novellas and comics and graphic novels. And Joseph Campbell had based a lot of his work on ideas that had come from Carl Jung about a collective unconscious, something that we might all be able to tap into. And this monomyth, this singular myth, Joseph Campbell believed was something that came from that collective unconscious that we might have access to.
Mm.
The last thing I'll say about Joseph Campbell is He died in 1987, but his work after his death has continued to fascinate and create an invitation for people to explore not only their own lives as stories, but perhaps the story of us collectively together as a society and what that might mean for us.
Beautiful. And the hero's journey, is that not, our own journey? We're all on a hero's journey,
Yes.
the inner exploration of that hero's journey. But you just said it's a collective hero journey, isn't it? One that we're all launching together.
That's
It's like
right.
the dark night of the soul. I believe everyone, we are collectively going through a dark night of the soul, collectively. But then also, we have our individual collective, our individual dark night of the soul that we go through. Isn't that
That's
funny? That leads to the hero's journey.
Right. That's right. And
Wow.
I think it's why it's so important that we look to the images of deities from many of the Eastern traditions, which we see deities, gods and goddesses with multiple arms holding multiple things. And I think it reminds us of the importance to be able to hold all of these things at once. We hold the individual journey as well as the collective journey. We hold our inner work as well as our outer work. We hold all of these things simultaneously. So I'm reminded every time that I see an image, of Krishna or another deity that's has multiple arms holding all of these different things, of how important it is that I too be able to hold all of these experiences and all of these journeys at once.
Yes.
I am always going to be interested in what is happening inside myself and my individual journey, but I also need to hold your journey and our journey
Yeah.
together and our larger journey
Yeah.
all at the same time.
That's beautiful. And I love that because there's only one story, is there not? There's only one creator. Yeah.
That's
Masculine and feminine together, one creator, one energy. One story, one universe, and we're
yes.
all part of the one. We're all part of that one supreme soul, that one energy that is a spark within all of us as that soul consciousness. And
Yes.
when we realize that, we realize that we can't harm anyone because we'll be harming ourselves. This is the secret to the oneness of everything. And, it's just so profound, that
Business.
one journey that
It
we all
is.
do separately, but it's collective at the same time.
That's right. That's right. And that I think, reminds us of the importance to move away from binary thinking. We have this tendency to look and see everything as, it's either black or white, it's right or wrong, it's positive or negative, it's light or shadow. And I think that type of binary thinking can get us further away from that recognition of the oneness of all things and of everything. And when we really understand our connection to everything and everyone, I think we stop seeing things quite so dogmatically and explicitly different. But we see everything in terms of a spectrum. We see everything's in terms of a circular spectrum, because that is the mythic cycle. Everything is returning as it is dying, it is being reborn.
That's right.
And we together, as our old stories are dying, as our old ways of doing things are dying, they are also then being reborn at the same time. And as we can accept the invitation to be part of that cycle, our lives and our journeys, They don't repeat. We're going deeper and deeper down a spiral.
That's right.
And it may seem like these same experiences are repeating, but they're not. They just look familiar. They rhyme, perhaps, but we're going deeper down the spiral.
Yeah, that's so beautiful.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
And it was so beautiful what you said about the, you know, because as a yogini, I believe, you know, we come from the oneness, we come from the one. And we are that spark, that divine spark of that soul consciousness. We come into this duality to learn about the dark and the light, the masculine and feminine, the good, the evil, you know, all the different polarities to bring us back to that wholeness, whole, holy again, holy again. You know, and for me, that is what enlightenment is, to bring all those parts of our soul that we gave away to people, places and things during our dark time, to bring it back into that wholeness again. And it's not some profound way thing that you have to sit there for hours in meditation all the time. It's just it's a knowingness. It's a beingness, isn't it? In that wholeness.
I'm really glad you said that, because I think this is something that it's so easy for us to forget and get lost in the abstractness of these things. But I really do believe that these ideas, they should be embodied. They should be things that we experience in our bodies. And they should be part of our practical everyday lives. It doesn't have to be, as you said, this distant meditative experience where we tap into these things, but we can recognize these things being present in the smallest moments, you know. And I like sometimes to have a really cold glass of water in the mornings. And is that cold water rushes over my tongue, and there's a bit of a charge, you know, to that. I'm reminded of many of these profound spiritual ideas in the simplest things, like just drinking a cold glass of water, feeling the sun on my skin, going for a walk, feeling my toes in the grass and the dirt, and feeling connection to that oneness arrives through the most practical of human experiences. It's not something we have to you know, go into another state of consciousness in order to access. It's accessible to us every day, all day, in just the small moments of our lives.
That's beautiful. It's just being here now, isn't it? Experiencing the moment fully, the divine moment fully in the now, which is the only place that there really truly is, where everything can be renewed, where all possibilities lie, where you can begin again, when you are forgiven of everything and you can start anew. It's so beautiful in that place. And it's just so profound. It's so, but we have to stop.
Yeah.
We have to stop, and we have to feel, and we have to breathe, and we have to take time to be in that, in, you know, be in that moment. Because in our fast-paced society, it's just so, there's so many distractions taking us away from the from that present all the time. And yeah, but that's what it is, isn't it? And that's what it means. Even when you meditate, but then you bring that feeling into your everyday thoughts, feelings, words, and actions, which helps you be more present, doesn't it?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it begins with awareness. It begins with the awareness of these things, even before we can put them into practice. Just hearing these ideas, they begin to wash over us, and we develop a certain type of awareness. When Joseph Campbell talked about the hero's journey, he mentions that the hero's journey begins in the normal world of this individual. It doesn't start in a magical land or in some sort of distant, you know, place. It starts in the normal world. And there's a recognition that all that is around me is familiar, and that I know what these things are. And then something interesting happens. There's one of two paths that end up emerging out of this normal world. One is a path that emerges out of boredom. It's someone who becomes very dissatisfied with their life. Someone who says, there's got to be something more. There's got to be something beyond what I'm experiencing right here. And we see this certainly in the great stories of different wisdom traditions, but we also see it in classic literature and in moments like Moby Dick, you know, the classic novel, when the story begins with Ishmael growing tired and bored of everything on the port, which is why he gets on a boat and sails out with Captain Ahab to the sea to go chase this white whale. And sometimes for us, that is the path, this path of boredom. Now there's another path, this other path that leads to a great journey. Many times it's a path we do not choose. Mm. It is a path that we are forced upon.
Yeah, forced upon us.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes this path, it actually comes through what appears to be tragedy or, you know, the loss of something very meaningful to us. Yeah. Where we say, this normal world that I'm a part of, there's nothing for me here now. And I'm going to set out on this adventure, this call that is coming for me, because I have no reason to stay behind. Yeah. And whichever of these two paths lead us there, they're the same path, because they take us into the possibility of what else could be, where these other mentors and people who help us move towards something greater in our lives can be a part of that. But there's obstacles and all sorts of other things that, you know, that may befall our path. So, you know, for some, that path is by choice. It's something that they say, I'm going to leave behind this world that I've known into this new way of being, into this new adventure. And then for some, it comes through a sense of desperation that there's nothing that they can do to stay in that normal world.
But it's good, because they have to move.
That's right.
The contrast, the suffering moves you. It's the only way. If you're not moving, you know, then something will come in to move you out of that comfort zone so you can grow and evolve. That's and right. The hero's journey. Where is the hero going? What is he looking for? We know what he's looking for. It's the alchemist, isn't it?
That's right. Yes, yes. And there's this idea of a boon, you know, that the hero is looking for. And by the way, Joseph Campbell was quick to mention, he uses this term hero, but he uses it interchangeably for men, women, animals. It's not, you know, confined to male expression. It really is you know, a heroic individual, you know, so whatever term we want to use there, and what that hero is in pursuit of, it has been called many things. You know, they're in the Arthurian tradition, they called this the Holy Grail.
That's
in
right.
The Buddhist tradition, we refer to this as enlightenment. You know, there's all these different names for it, but in a sense, what we're really after is the ineffable. It's the thing that draws us that we don't even have language for sometimes. It's that greater sense within ourselves. We at the Joseph Campbell Foundation recently published these series of essentials books. And
yes,
on the cover of the one about the hero's journey, there's this labyrinth.
Yes.
And in the labyrinth, one of the things people don't realize about the labyrinth is you would enter the labyrinth from many different places, but it was always moving you towards the center. The labyrinth was moving you towards the center. And that is the essence of the hero's journey. Whatever lies in the center, whatever boon, enlightenment, holy grail that you're searching for that lies at the center, it is a metaphor for returning to the center of ourselves.
Know thyself.
That's it. Know thyself. As above, so below. We see all of these different traditions, the alchemical tradition, the hermetic tradition that, you know, has been helping us understand this through many different lenses. And I think that when we find the entry point into that labyrinth, when we find the tradition, the practice, the way of being in the world that is going to take us towards that, that's often a first step. And as we go deeper into that labyrinth, it can get very dark. It can get confusing. We can say, which way do I turn? And yet there is still some unseen force, some wind that seems to be carrying us, guiding us, moving us towards that. I sometimes refer to it like a river that has a force and a course. We can hang on to a tree, you know, branch and say, no, I'm not going to go with it. I'm going to stay here. Or we can release
and surrender. We can
move, surrender.
Yeah.
And go where it's taking us.
Yeah. And that's what you've got to, you know, that's so important to do. You've got to let go.
Yeah.
Because the advantage and the miraculous and the greater, you know, enlightenment and the bliss at the end is so worth everything, you know.
It is. You know, Joseph Campbell talked about following your bliss.
Yeah.
It's such a, we have one of these essentials books that deals with following your bliss. And it's sort of funny because near the end of his life, he said, I should have said, follow your blisters, because in a sense, it's one of the most difficult things in the world to actually follow your true bliss. It's not always an easy path to follow that thing that brings you fully alive. Many of us who have walked down that path know the difficulty that can be part of that experience. I'm sure you've had your own challenges in following your own bliss. What for you? I'm curious. You know, is the what carries you through as you follow your bliss? You know, how do you move through that?
That's beautiful. My bliss is, I think that my bliss is wanting humanity's bliss. I think that's on a larger scale.
Yeah.
And my bliss is having them moments of pure connection in nature, but also with myself when I go within and feel that divine love light energy from God, Goddess, Creator, whatever, that connection. The moments, that's beautiful. But what is bliss? Because it's so relative. Because everyone has their own way of looking and acknowledging their own bliss. So for some people, it could be like this beautiful thing. From others, it's so different. It's all relative.
That's right. That's exactly right. Right. And, you know, I think that's Joseph Campbell sometimes talked about how this idea of bliss and in these mythic experiences are like they're like a finger pointing to the moon. And we get very obsessed with the finger that's pointing at the moon rather than what the finger is pointing towards. And I think, you know, with bliss, it's much the same, where we can say, well, my bliss doesn't look like your bliss. And so maybe it's not, you know, correct, or it's not right. And I think it's exactly what you were just saying. It's finding your bliss in your path towards it, because what brings me fully alive may not bring you fully alive at all. It's something else Campbell said. He said he didn't believe people were so much looking for the meaning of life as much as they were the rapturous experience of being alive.
Yes, that's pure bliss. That is pure bliss. That is pure bliss. And I think bliss is always also very, you know, close to passion. Yes. Following your passion, because yes. For people, this is our life. I know that we have other lives, but it's our life now. And and we must follow our passion and do what we love, because this will bring us bliss. You know, so many people are doing things in jobs and work that they do not have a passion or find any bliss in. And it's going to make them unhappy. And if they're unhappy, then people around them will be unhappy. So following your bliss. And then once we have that passion and that bliss, the best thing is to give it out and help everyone else to have their passion and bliss, because we're here to serve humanity.
That's right. That's right. And I love the order you just put that in, because we sometimes try and give bliss that we don't have ourselves, and we can't give to others what we don't have ourselves. It's so important we discover that bliss for ourselves. And then when we have, just as you said, it's not just to hold it and keep it, but it is to share it. It is to bring it to others. And that, I think, is one of the most beautiful experiences we can have in community, is when we are able to bring that bliss to others.
Yes, yes, beautiful. It just reminded me, I was just at Canterbury Cathedral, the largest cathedral in the whole of England, and I walked in, and at that moment, it was unbelievable, the feeling of that sacredness and praying in the crypt. It was just so close to incredible bliss at that moment. I was feeling that.
Yes,
it was
just absolutely
sacred bliss.
I've stood in that same cathedral and had a very similar experience. It is absolutely breathtaking what washes over you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It really is. It's sacred.
Very sacred and profound.
Yes.
Really. And so it's that bliss. And a passion, bliss, spirituality.
Yes.
I think they're all very in that way, that spirituality has that bliss. Passion, they're all mixed, aren't they, in that way?
They are. It's an alchemical mix. You know, we were referring to alchemy just a few moments ago, and I think there's an effort on our part to parse these things apart and pull this one from that one and try and identify, and that's okay. You know, our brains love to classify things and love to put things in orders and boxes and buckets, you know, so that we might better understand them. And that's a very human inclination. But there's so much freedom when we let go of those classification systems, and when we say, let them be intermixed.
Yeah.
One of my favorite dishes is spaghetti. I love spaghetti noodles, because they become all intertwined and mixed together. And, you know, you don't have to pull each noodle apart in order to enjoy them. You can enjoy them all intermixed together. And I think there's something about, you know, these ideas we're talking about, bliss and spirituality, how they all do become mixed together. Because, you know, I personally believe that we're spiritual beings having this human experience, and we don't always have clarity on the experience that we're having right now, and we don't have to. That's sort of the grace and the gift that we're given.
Yes, it's that faith to step forward every day, you know, with that faith. Sometimes it's blind faith, but it's still faith. And that's still an inner knowing that propels you forward, that, you know, it's just beautiful. What about, tell us about the other, the Essential series. You've talked about two of them.
Yes. So there's two others, and we're continuing to produce these. The third one is Joseph Campbell speaking about love. And, you know, in some ways we tend to leave love out of the conversation when we, you know, speak about myth and consciousness. And, you know, we perhaps speak about love in a very general sense, in a very, we use it interchangeably with the oneness of all things. And that's okay. But it also is, I think, tremendously helpful to us when we go deeper into this idea of love, which is what Campbell does. And, you know, one of the things that Campbell mentions is how I am confined to the English language, for better or worse. It's the only language that I speak. And, but I understand that there are a number of other terms in other languages that describe many types of love. There are, you know, words that describe the type of love that a mother has for a child, which is very different than the type of love that one lover would have for another lover, an erotic love being very different from a love one friend might have for another, or the love that one might have for an animal. Of course, you know, using English, I use the same term for a romantic partner as I do for spaghetti. You know, I say, I love spaghetti. I love this person because we're limited, you know, to this one word. But I think when we begin to explore the depths of the feelings and the meaning that we use around that word love, there's treasures, untold treasures to be discovered that we can find. And that's really what Joseph Campbell does in that book, is looking at the depths of love and what that truly means. And the other themes it connects to, because there are ideas like sacrifice deeply connected to love. Those things that we truly love, we're willing to sacrifice for. There's a connection, even a parent's love for a child. There's a willingness to sacrifice your desires and your wants and needs for this child.
Yes.
And in the same way, you know, when we love another person romantically or even platonically, there's a willingness to sacrifice for that person, where your needs, your desires are not at the capstone, you know, of everything. The other volume that we have coming out later this year in this Essential series is Joseph Campbell on creativity. And there are many within the professional creative world who have been very inspired by Joseph Campbell's work. But I would suggest to you, and Joseph Campbell believed this, that we are all creative. Every single one of us. And sure, some people make their living through creativity, but every single one of us are creative. And there is much to be understood about our own creativity, our ability to bring things into the world that did not exist before. It's a type of magic.
It is magic. Yes. It is magic. We are made in the image of God, Goddess, the creator. Therefore, we create our own life experience. And collectively, we create the world timeline as well. We create it all. And when we realize that, we stop becoming a victim. We become a creator.
That's
And
right.
we take our power and we can embody that, you know, and it's just, it's a wonderful, when you realize the power of your creatorship as a creator or a creatrix. Yeah.
Yes. Love a creatrix. That's,
yeah.
Yes.
It's this amazing. Yes.
Yeah. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, you know, you and I are creating right here. We've never spoken before. This is our first conversation, and we are creating a conversation that we've never had before. And I find what a gift to be able to do that, even with a friend I've known a long time, to meet up for coffee or tea, to sit down. We create a conversation together that we've never had before. And that act of co-creating something together, it brings a type of magic into the world. If we have eyes to see it,
yeah,
we can appreciate it. If we can recognize what is happening, I sometimes will be traveling somewhere in the world, and I will think about something in this place. I might be standing on the banks of Malta, and suddenly I will be thinking about a piece of silver jewelry, and I'll think to myself, I am probably, of all the people that have ever existed in the world, I'm the only person who's ever stood on the banks of Malta and thought about this particular piece of jewelry, and I'm doing it right now. No one else is. It reminds us that while we're all in this collective experience, we're all having brand new individual experiences with creativity all the time.
Yes.
What a delight that is to be in the midst of that.
And I think that we are the creator and the creatrixes of life, but we do it co-creatively. We cannot do it unless we are connected to that divine love light energy of that's created worlds. You know, we have the, there's only one source, one story, and it comes in through every single person on this planet. It comes through us, and we have the free will to use it for good, which is creativity, and to use it, you know, in an egoic, selfish way. You know,
that's
not
right.
Good of others. And it's powerful to know that, you know, this stream never runs out. It's always there, that stream. And it's always
there.
It's always a stream of divinity, a stream of goodness, a stream of righteousness. And through us, that's how the oneness experiences this world of duality.
That's right. That's exactly right. Exactly right. I'm reminded, there's a number of times that Joseph Campbell would talk about, you know, these ideas. There's a particular thing that he says here in this book. Would it be okay if I read a quote from him?
Please. Yeah. Yes. Is this one of your favorite ones?
This is one of my favorite ones. This quote, you know how sometimes you read something and it continues to work on you throughout the day or it comes back to you. And this is one that I've read over and over and it continues to come back to me. It's an idea that keeps working on me. And so I'd love to, it's very short, but I'd love to share it. Campbell said, "The individual must go in quest of their own mythology, their own sanctification, their own justification, their own vivification of their life. It's an individual quest. The institution can help by giving you a few clues, but you've got to do the journey yourself." And when he says this, we recognize this is the first work. And then, of course, we take that into community, as we've talked about. But we've got to begin with doing the work ourselves. So often we want someone to do it for us, right?
There's no easy road.
Yeah. And this is, you know, he says the individual must go in quest of their own mythology. And what he's saying there, you know, that this word mythology, if we want to just get really simple about it, it's the stories that people use to make sense of the world around them. And so we must go in quest of our own stories that make sense of the world around us. Now, there were lots of stories that ancient people used to make sense of the world around them. They didn't understand why sometimes it rains. And so they would tell a story about the deities being at odds with each other and bringing rain down. And of course, now we have science that helps us understand some of these things that we didn't understand previously, but we're still using stories to make sense of the world around us.
Yeah.
I live in Los Angeles and I unfortunately have to spend a good deal of time behind the wheel of a car driving from place to place. And oftentimes someone will be a bit rude to me in traffic and they will cut me off in traffic. And I find myself immediately creating a story about that person. I will say, oh, they were probably raised as a selfish person and they probably were mean to animals. And, you know, all of these things that comes up in my head. And it's me using stories to make sense of the experiences, you know, that I'm having. But what I love about what Campbell said is that we get the opportunity to make sense of these stories. We have agency that I could choose to say that person who just cut me off, perhaps their child is ill at school and they're rushing to get there and pick up that child.
Yes.
I have agency to make sense of the world through the stories that I tell. And I can choose a better story. I can choose a story that serves us all rather than a story that just serves me.
Yes.
So important.
It's so important. That is absolutely beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. And stories, that's how humanity was raised. That's how we raised our vibration, through the stories around the heath, around the hearth. The stories are what our history, our true history is. It comes through, and it's so important to keep them stories going. You know, like when I bring my children to my father and he talks all about his stories. It's so wonderful, because my mother never tells me about her stories, and she will take them and we will never know about her life. But my father tells us all these stories. Mm. It's so important to keep your life and to tell everyone about your stories, especially your children. That's how they get to know you as a person. Right. You've got to give of yourself, because that's all we've got, is our true, honest, authentic self to give out to the world and tell our story, you know, of how what happened to us, you know, and it's power. That's powerful. It rocks the world. It shifts people.
I really believe this, The greatest gift we can give to another person is the gift of our story.
Yes.
If I share with you who I am, what I've been through, what has formed me as a person, that is the greatest gift that I could give you. So I'm moved by hearing your father sharing his stories with your children, because it's the greatest gift he could give them.
That's right.
It's so meaningful. Mm-hmm. And it forms us. It shapes us. It also builds empathy within us, because when I hear your story,
yes,
I suddenly have empathy for your journey, and I understand better what it is to be you.
Exactly. But it's not just the good stories. We have to say the bad stories, the suffering, all the ones that we're ashamed of, the things that we've done. We have to say them all.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And it makes our children, especially, whole, rounded people.
That's right. That's right. I've learned more. My parents have been very, very gracious about sharing stories of their own failures. And I think I've probably learned more from those stories, not what not to do in the world, but more about how to walk through failure, how to give yourself grace, how to give others grace when they experience failure. I've learned more about how to be a better person in the world through those difficult stories. Now, I'm glad we have the celebration stories, the good stories too. we need it all.
We do.
The wholeness you were talking about, right? We need all of it. Mm-hmm. But when we only give part of the story, we're really not serving those that we're telling our stories to, that we're sharing our stories with.
Exactly. And that's why the people that love us and everyone, our community, the world, have to see us from all sides.
That's right. That's right.
Always.
Yeah.
In every way. That's how we connect with each other. That's our true point of zero point authenticity. You know? Yeah. That's where how we connect. It's a tribal thing, because they used to sit around and do that. You know, it's so
they meet us where we're at, and that's really what they're meant to do. They're meant to be tools for our practical lives, you know, not just abstract ideas, but for those decision points that we find ourselves in life.
Wow. Honestly, John, it has been such a pleasure to find out all about Joseph Campbell and his wonderful ancient wisdom and your divine knowledge that you've brought to this lovely podcast. I've enjoyed it so much, and I've learned so much, and I've just been so uplifted. So I just like to say thank you for being on the Great Awakening Show.
Thank you. I tell you, I walk away from the show today inspired and full of light from our conversation. Thank you for this invitation to be with you and your audience. And I'm excited to continue to hear about the great work that you're doing through this podcast. So thank you for the invitation.
Thank you.